This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's verse comes from 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 9. When he turned his back to leave Samuel, God gave him another heart, and all these signs came to pass that day. This is the first heart surgery in the Bible, and it was conducted by God himself. My name is Ryan, and welcome to Scripture Read Badly.
And I'm Jeremy, and I also know a vascular surgeon, and it's more harder than you think to do heart surgery, apparently. Who would have thunk it? So good job, God, with the technical proficiency.
Hip, hip, hooray.
Yeah, this week we're talking about Samuel 1st, 9 and 10, which explores Saul being chosen king.
Mm-hmm.
And last week we looked at how God didn't really want that.
Yeah.
Awkward.
Oh, man. God didn't want it. Samuel didn't want it. And still, as I'm sure that you'll remember from the last episode, they demanded their figgy pudding. They really wanted that king. Before we go much further, I just want to say, obviously, I have a cult, unless you have some kind of ear condition in which you can't hear change in timbre of people's voices. Most of my voice is coming out of my nose today, and I don't know how that's possible, because it's supposed to come out your mouth.
It is.
But as I told you in the green room earlier, Jeremy, I feel like I have a bus parked in my face. That's kind of, that's my medical condition. The official diagnosis right now, it's bus face.
Bus face.
All right. So Samuel said, nah, you shouldn't get a king. And God said, nah, they shouldn't. But they really want it. So I guess I could use this. It doesn't look like it was his first choice.
Nope. Nah. Definitely not.
Anyway, so we kick off at chapter 9. Jeremy, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, it lists a whole bunch of people, and I don't know all of the people, but there's definitely son of Arphia, a Benjamite, a man of wealth, and he had a son whose name was Saul. And so it sets up, this guy is probably known, this guy is probably respected because of his wealth. And if you look back into what we were talking about in Exodus 18, God had this principle in the people of Israel that the people who lead, or the elders, or the justice people, would be known, respected, and like faithful to their families. Yep. And so this Saul is also described as a handsome young man. There was not a man among the people of Israel more handsome than he. So he looks great. He looks strong. He looks like he should be a great king.
Yep.
And when you think of some kings of the past, they're not necessarily good looking, but they're just good at murdering the right people at the right time. Whereas at this stage, it looks like Saul is just a strong, good looking dude, right?
And very tall.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Saul, which I think links into the strength. And you look around the world currently, and a lot of people are voting, like a lot of countries are voting for strong armed people, not necessarily smart, good looking people, or even compassionate people, which is interesting that you look at New Zealand currently, because they have a very compassionate leader who has shown her, not weakness, but her, what's the word I'm looking for? Vulnerability. It's not like she comes out and she's like, I'm going to punch and kill people. Like, she's very vulnerable, whereas these people are choosing a king that seems just strong, good-looking, tall, big.
So I want to point out here that in the end of verse 2, it says that Saul's head and shoulders, his shoulders upward, was taller than any of the people. So do you think that means everyone else, the tallest person besides him, came up to his shoulder in the whole nation?
Yes, or it was just a turn of phrase to mean he was very tall compared to most people.
Right.
So there's probably one or two other people that are like, who get the question, whoa, do you play basketball, man?
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like Saul is that gangly stick guy. He's like a buff, tall, big giant.
Right. So, I don't know the average height of any given Jewish man, let alone one from a few thousand years ago. But let's say the tallest of them were probably 6'5". When I see a guy who's 6'5", I
think... That's huge.
That's a big guy. I don't want to get on his bad side. Nope. But I can maybe crawl through his legs. So if we're saying that the tallest of them was 6'5", then he was about a foot taller than that.
Yep.
That's a big dude.
That's a big dude. That's a
very big dude. That's potentially rivaling some of the giants of Gath. Or Gad? Gath. I think it's Gath.
One of the G-towns.
Yeah. Where, what's his name? Goliath was from.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh, but also, that's interesting, because later on, David goes to the battle.
Yeah.
And the Philistines are facing off against the Israelites, and David says, I want to fight, not to spoil too much, but he says, I want to fight, so Saul says, that's great, here's my armor, but it was too big for David. Now, at the moment, here in chapter 9, it says that Saul was a handsome young man. So, by that point, it's probably only 5-10 years in the future, at most. I'm not a historian, but... Right. We aren't theologians or historians, but we give it a darn go, yeah. Don't we? But David, I'm sure, wasn't too much shorter than he ended up being by the time he was fully grown. So I'm sure that if he was 6 foot tall, which is kind of the average height for a big, sturdy dude... which we are led to believe that David was, because he was a man of war and so on, then the armor being too big for a guy who's 6 foot is probably pretty big.
Yeah.
I imagine he'd have to get custom-made shoes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, back then they all probably had to get custom-made shoes. Unless there was... The big store here is the shoe heel. There's no shoe heels back then.
The shoe heel. Yo.
And it's like racks of shoes that look like mini heels all over the shop. It's the best.
Wow.
But there's no shoe heel back then.
Hmm.
In the time of Benjamin.
No, but there were donkeys.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was a dude that owned donkeys named Kish, and he was Saul's father. But he lost his donkeys. And that's not a euphemism. Nope. I don't know what that would be a euphemism for, but...
Many things.
He lost his donkeys. Yeah. And so he tells Saul... Take one of the young men, who I imagine probably of his household, get up, go look for the donkeys. So that's responsible parenting.
Very much. Go look for my stuff that I lost.
Yeah.
And take pretty one sure of the others. Some...
Yeah. Take your sister and go look for it. I imagine that that would have been a little bit inconvenient for this dude, but the fact that they were wealthy means he probably had time to spare.
Yeah.
Because the wealth was not based off the amount of time that you spent sitting in an office.
No.
It was based off
how many donkeys you had. And they
the family's donkeys. Right, so this is important. It's wealth recovery.
Yep.
It's fiscal responsibility.
It very much
That's what he's doing.
And they go good and stuff, look, Saul. And they look through the land of Benjamin, but they do not find them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, this shows also the relationship with Saul and his dad, because he says, come, let us go back, lest my father cease to care about the donkeys and become anxious about us. So he thinks, my father values my life more than me finding these horses, or these donkeys, so we'll go back just in case he's worrying about us, which is so good, because then when you flip it to the prodigal son back in the... Oh, no, not back, but forward in Jesus' time when he tells that story, that guy's almost the opposite. Like, my dad hates me and wants me to die, but at least I can work for him, whereas Saul seems to be like, no, my dad loves me. He doesn't really want these donkeys.
Yeah, yeah. So that's... It turns out Kish is a little bit better off than I gave him credit for.
Yeah.
Right.
Then he has like a moment of clarity and says, "Behold, there is a man of God in this city, and he is a man who is held in honor. All that he says comes true. So now let us go there." So this is like the Find My Phone app of the back of the day, but it's Find My Donkey app, and it's a man of God who does that. So they're like, "Oh, let's go take him some sandwiches, and he'll tell us where the donkey is."
Right, right. So
is interesting because is that God's plan? Did God put this idea in his head to get him to meet Samuel? Because he's... Or is this just very much chance? And then God's like, "Oh, here's this tall bloke that's lost his donkey. You should put oil on that guy."
I wonder if God led the donkeys away so that this meeting could take place. But also, if you knew that there was a very spiritual person who was very close to God and often had prophetic words that came true, and you were having trouble with something, not to treat them too much like a fortune teller, but would you be tempted to go to them and pray with them and see if they were able to hear from God when you weren't?
Yeah, I've done that before. Mm-hmm. Like, constantly in Newcastle, we would have different speakers come through that was known for that sort of stuff. And they wouldn't always be like, "Thus say the Lord, Jeremy, you must do this." But it was just the act of praying alongside someone that was quite encouraging or quite powerful.
Sure.
Although sometimes it was a fortune-telling thing, like, "Who's my wife going to be?"
Yeah.
And they're like, "I'm not allowed to tell you that." Like, dang it.
Yeah. Yeah, and may this be a warning to everyone listening. If you ever come across somebody who has a quote-unquote prophetic word to you about who exactly your spouse is going to be, take it with a grain of salt.
Or, actually, as soon as they tell you, altogether. Go and ask that lady. No?
Oh, yeah.
Too passionately.
I mean, if you're into, her, but
like, "I hate this chick. I have to date her now." Or man, yeah, if you're a sometimes, lady.
That's right. Sometimes hatred of somebody could be a mask for actually having feelings for them, but that's mostly a childish thing that is left over from primary school. So don't take that as a hint either way. But anyway, Saul, ever the sandwich artist, decided to go and make some sangers for the man of God in the town. All right.
Did he? So I can't find this verse. Where are we?
Let me see. Six. So he says, verse
7.
We don't
have any bread. What are we going to bring?
Yeah. So we can't... All right, so he can't make any sandwiches.
He wants to be a sandwich
artist. Because they've run out of bread.
Unbelievable. You need bread.
Does. Maybe he could curate some sandwiches or something that other people have made, other artworks.
Oh, so instead they just give him cash.
Sorry.
So that he can buy the sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
And prophets were formerly called seer. And Paul said...
Yeah.
I just called him Paul. This is a different guy, guys. And Saul said to his servant, "Well,
this one
said,
doesn't get a name change.
No, he just... Oh, he gets king added, I suppose. And now you will be called king. King Saul.
Your new first name is King, and your new last name is formerly your first name.
Formerly.
Oh, wouldn't that suck?
I mean, if
you went and got married and changed your name...
To King?
But you did... Well, say when I got married, if my wife, whose name is Fiona, if she had to change her first name to Winslade, my last name, and then her first name became her last name, Fiona, then that would just be, that'd be wacky.
So
but that's kind of what we're
Winslade?
Talking about here. Yeah, we would have to. And I wonder, I've never met anybody like this, but Jeremy, maybe you have. Somebody who is often called by their last name.
Yeah.
Who then gets married and their last name changes.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah. That's definitely happened. I just can't think up someone I know who has that.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, I know some people, some women who often get called their last name, but I have yet to talk to somebody who's had to undergo this kind of identity change.
Yeah.
Where they're going, no, my last name is no longer that. You could call me that as a nickname, but that's my maiden name.
Yeah.
Now my last name's this. That could be a bit of a trip.
Yeah. Stop calling me Smithy. Sure. My last name is Black now. All right, Blackie. See, that would be an easy change.
Well, then you could just compromise and say Blacksmith.
That's true. And there everyone's like, why do you call that girl Blacksmith? She likes smashing metal, you know.
Yep. All right. So he goes and sees
the seer,
the prophet. He says, let's go. So they went to the city where the man of God was, which is probably Shiloh, because at that time, Samuel was judging Israel, as we talked about last week. And so they go into the city. They went up the hill to the city. So Shiloh is positioned on a hill, which is militarily a good thing. So it's probably safe to have the spiritual headquarters there, especially if the Ark of the Covenant is with them, which it is at this point, after having been returned. So they met some young women coming out to draw water. And they said to them, is the seer here? And they answered, he is. Behold, he is just ahead of you. Hurry, he has come just now to the city because the people have sacrificed today on the high place. Ooh, so that's not a good sign. We had in the last chapter lots of talk of the Israelites wanting to be more and more like the locals, which is not a good thing. But part of that was sacrificing to idols and other things like that. So if this is a sacrifice to an idol in the high place, that's not a good start. But if it is a sacrifice to God, then forgive me for not reading ahead.
Yeah, but at the same time, if it is either, and Samuel's come to bless it, because it says later, since he must bless the sacrifice, afterwards those who are invited will eat. Some of the sacrifices God didn't make them go all the way to the temple, they would just sacrifice it there and or sell it and take the money to the other place. So I wonder if this is referring to Israel's continual downfall. And I don't think it's explored.
No, it seems to be a little bit ambiguous, but I imagine if they were saying that the man of God has come to bless it, then it's probably for Yahweh.
I'm going to look this up later.
Surely they would know that
high place.
A sacrifice to an Ashtaroth or something won't be blessed by the man of God.
No. And that God wouldn't start the kingship at this moment if the people were being jerks.
Yeah.
Not jerks. Ignoramuses. That's a word, right?
I think the word offensive. Is just anus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. all right, so it says, now the day before Saul came, the Lord had revealed to Samuel, tomorrow, about this time, I'll send to you a man from the land of Benjamin. So this is God clearly laying out to Samuel everything that's about to happen.
Yep.
Which is pretty sweet, which probably means he had a hand in at least allowing the donkeys to remain hidden. Yeah. Whether or not he spooked them off in the first place or led them off or something.
Donkeys, did.
Maybe he fed them some thistles and said, come away with me.
Yeah.
We have to draw out Saul.
Yeah.
Something
and
like that.
And then they get to just chill at Samuel's house. It's interesting that it also says, anoint him to be prince over my people Israel. And then I have a little footnote, or leader. So maybe the word king wasn't even used back then. And it's just a word we put on it. And so they didn't even have a definition of king. It was more like chief or prince.
Right. But that was a bit like judge.
Yeah, yeah. But like,
and at this time, Samuel was judging. So it wasn't like God was saying, you are going to hand over the reins of being a judge to Saul. No. It seems like something a little bit different. Probably more military something.
Yeah, yeah. But then some of the judges were militarily inclined to shrug off oppression. So you wonder what the people are thinking. Like, this is going to be a king that's separate from God, or is this going to be a king that is also a priest? Or because all the other people have a king, we want that too.
Yeah.
Irrelevant of what that means with God. I don't know.
Mm. Anyway. Yeah. All right, so he does also say, as part of this commission, he says that the prince will save the people from the hand of the Philistines. And we know from having read ahead and from years of being PKs that the deliverance comes at the hand of David.
Yep. Slash God.
So, right. So is this God predicting a potential future, or is this God saying putting these things into motion will lead to David who will deliver the people?
Or is it that God is like, my hope is that Saul, as the good dude that you think he is, will rescue the people, but his choices determine the outcome.
Yeah.
And I think you can get both of those from, just like I think all through the Bible, you can get both, what is it called, fatalism and free willism, or whatever that's called.
Sure. Yeah.
Just by looking at it from a different perspective. So I think God is in this, and God is giving Saul the chance to be awesome.
Okay, because I, right before recording this, I just finished rewatching Avengers Infinity War.
Well, nice.
Because Avengers Endgame is coming out soon at time of recording, and I'm really excited for that. But something that that I want to point out is that in that movie, the character of Doctor Strange, as portrayed by Bumblenut Crumblecob, or whatever his name is, Benedict Cumberbatch. I know his real name, but I just wanted to say,
you know that actor?
Yeah. Eggs Benedict Cucumber Patch.
Whoa,
yeah, that
yeah.
guy.
Solid guy.
He, when they know that the bad guy, the big bad, Thanos, is coming, he uses the Time Stone, which is this powerful gem that allows him to see into the future. And so he looks at over 14 million potential futures.
Whoa.
Because they're about to face off against him, and it doesn't look good. And at the end of it, he says, I've seen over 14 million, and then they say, how many did we win? And he said, one.
Whoa.
And you just go, oh, I hope this is the one that they win.
Yep.
I hope everything that happens after this, even though, spoiler alert, it looks like the Avengers lose at the end of the movie.
Yes.
I hope everything is a loss in order that there will be an actual victory, and that was the only way.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right, because then Doctor Strange also says, right before he disappears at the end of the movie, not to be seen again probably for most of the next, he says, there was no other way. And then he kind of fades into dust. And you just go, oh, this had to be the one future. It had to be. So I wonder if when God gives prophetic words like this, and we know this from heaps of times throughout the Bible that prophecies are written down. Things like God saying to David, you will always have a descendant on the throne forever.
Yeah.
We know that David has Solomon, his son, on the throne, and then there are a long succession of kings that get worse and worse and worse, descended from David, and then there's no longer a kingdom, and then they get overthrown a few times, and then Jesus comes along and establishes himself as the spiritual king on the spiritual throne of Israel for all eternity. So it kind of, it's a bit of a loophole, maybe, if we're thinking about it in human terms, for fulfilling that prophecy. It's fantastic. I couldn't think of a better one, for sure. Nope. But in the case of this, where God says, Saul will deliver my people from the hand of the Philistines, the end of Saul's life is actually death in a battle with, I think it's with the Philistines, or it could be with the Ammonites.
Yeah.
But it's after he consults a witch, and he's already been abandoned by God and stuff, and David is not taking the throne from him, even though he could.
Yeah.
And David's actually living in Philistia, seeking refuge, because that's the one place Saul won't go, because he's afraid of them. So I just think this is a really interesting and juicy little prophecy that God has here spoken to Samuel, because Saul doesn't do this.
Nope.
But I guess it was God's plan for him to do it. But maybe it was that this was the only way to have the people delivered from the Philistines, was to make Saul the king now so that David could take over.
Yeah.
That's what that was all about. I don't know.
But, and it's interesting too, the whole, he didn't want a king. Technically, they should have been united already, and the judges should have been awesome. And yeah, if only they just went by the book of Deuteronomy, they would have been the greatest ever. And we don't see that really until Solomon's on the throne.
Mm-hmm.
So at every stage, God's like, oh, are you serious? I have to, like, fix this.
Rerouting.
Exactly. Constant.
Yeah. Google. Well, I guess you're right, because in the law, God did specifically say to Israel, you won't have any other kings. I will be your king.
Yeah.
And now here, he isn't reneging on that,
nope,
but he is allowing the course of Israel and their potential future to be changed forever.
Yeah.
Because of the choices of his people. So, super interesting. I always get fascinated with time travel and potential futures and what if I'd done something a little bit differently, yeah, butterfly effect type stuff. Always fascinated by that.
It is a fascinating topic.
Mm-hmm.
And...
all right.
Then...
So, he continues to speak to Samuel and says, I heard my people, they want a king.
Yeah.
And so then Samuel sees Saul, and what happens? Verse 17.
He says... Oh, yeah, yeah. He it is who shall restrain my people... is what the Lord said. He,
right.
That is a weird sentence. He it is who shall restrain my people. Then Saul approached Samuel in the gate and said, tell me, where is the house of the seer? And he's like, I am the seer. Go up before me to the high place, for today you shall eat with me, and in the morning I'll let you go and will tell you all that is on your mind. Whoa, sick. So he's definitely playing up the I'm a magician that knows all your secrets kind of thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And doesn't really say I'm speaking on behalf of God, but we get to that. And then he refers to the donkeys. As for your donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, do not set your mind on them, for they have been found. So God probably has set up this because he knows about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then Saul answers with a like Gideon type response. Am I not a Benjaminite from the least of the tribes of Israel, and is not my clan the humblest of all the clans of the tribe of Benjamin? Why then have you spoken to me in this way? Like, it seems like he feels overly honored by how Samuel responds to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I suppose, like, because we know that he ends up being the king, and we think it's described that he's this tall, handsome guy. Maybe in his head, he's like, oh no, I'm just my dad's son, eh? I just go around and do stuff. And that comes back to haunt him later when he's super insecure about himself. But it's interesting right now that he's not like, oh, sweet. Like, his response isn't pride. Like, of course you should speak like this to me. I'm my dad's favorite or something. And then Samuel took Saul and the young man and brought them into the hall and gave them a place at the head. So he gets the place of honor.
Place of honor, yeah.
And Samuel said to the cook, bring the portion I gave you, of which I said to you, put it aside. Oh, so he's put something aside specially for him.
Mm. And if I remember this properly, the instruction for sacrifices in the high places was to give a certain portion to the priests.
Oh, true.
And that was their way of partaking and blessing the sacrifice, I think.
Yep.
So this is potentially Samuel making a spiritual gesture with Saul, because he's about to be anointed, where he's saying, see, what was kept is set before you, eat, because it was kept for you until the hour appointed that you might eat with the guests. So I think this is potentially Samuel saying you are going to partake in the spiritual leadership of the people.
Okay.
But I could be very wrong. I have sick brain at the moment, so yeah, that's fine. I'm not
sick
sure.
Brain brings us good things. That's an Sometimes. Interesting thing then, that God's setting up the king to be both. Or at least to be involved in both, that it's not just a political thing with the priesthood next door. But then that's odd too, because when you look at church and state when they're together, that's not always good. Oh, but that's looking at it from a secular point of view.
No, but we talked about last time that potentially God's ideal is not to have a priest running a country.
Yeah.
It's to have
the people.
But a godly person governing, associating themselves with the spiritual head. So kind of the church and state in tandem.
Yep.
riding a tandem bicycle. The state up the front, because they're the physical face of the whole thing.
True.
So they get to steer. But the priests are the ones powering along behind him, maybe? I don't know. Something like that.
That makes
sense. So church and state in tandem, maybe this is what this is. A gesture of that.
Ooh. A gesture of that. So Saul ate with Samuel that day. And then there was a bed prepared for him so he could sleep. And then as he wakes up, Samuel's like, all right, you can leave now. And then he's like, make your servant go further so that I can tell you all your secrets. Ooh, secrets. Cool. And then as the kid goes, or maybe it's not a kid, maybe his servant is a grown man, leaves, Samuel takes a flask of oil and poured it on his head and kissed him and said, has not the Lord anointed you to be prince over his people Israel? And you shall reign over the people of the Lord, and you will save them from the hand of the surrounding enemies. And referring back to what you were saying about the spiritual thing, priests were anointed with oil too, right?
Yes, they were.
And so this is... And I wonder if this is unique to the people of Israel, as in, did the Philistines anoint their kings? Like, this is how kings get started? Or is this just a God-ordained, let's put oil on people who lead? Right? That could be interesting.
I'm not entirely familiar with the
with the oil.
Yeah, with
the
not,
oiling
I'm
of
not
people.
Very familiar with oil, if it isn't olive or coconut.
Yeah, true.
That's and even then oils. I'm not familiar with all the uses of coconut oil, of which I've heard there are many.
Oh,
but
they're good for beards in the dry seasons.
Okay. I use coconut oil in a saucepan with popcorn.
Okay. Hello.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Stovetop popcorn, if you know how to do it, is the bee's meow. Is that the expression?
The bee's meow. It's the bee's knees or the cat's meow, but you've just created a new thing. Bee's meow. Yeah.
Well, it's either that or the cat's knees. I'm not sure.
Ooh, I want to know if bee's knees is a Lithuanian expression.
Ooh, maybe you could coin it in Lithuanian.
Well, yeah. I'll have to figure out what the word for meow is. It's probably meow. Yeah. And bees, I know. Bitters. The bitters nice. Meow.
All right. So this looks a little bit like the... to me, it looks a little bit like the road to Emmaus, where Jesus is walking after the resurrection with a couple of disciples, and they don't quite recognize him, and he's revealing to them the word of God. And that's what Samuel says that he's going to do, but then he anoints Saul.
Ooh.
And he seems to imply that Saul knew that this was happening all along, and maybe that is the sign of a humble person. Or maybe it's the sign of somebody in denial. What
Ooh, true.
You think?
In his behavior later, it's most probably denial or self deprecation. That's the
right word. So, pride masquerading as humility.
Yeah, false humility. Well, I can't say words right now.
Right. Yeah, that false makes humility. Sense. Okay, because he earlier he said, no, 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 it's not me, it's not me. I'm the most humble of X, Y, and Z. But one of the things he said he was the most humble of was the households. They were the most humble household in their tribe. But they were really wealthy. So maybe he was lying? Or maybe he... Or maybe he viewed himself as less important than others, which is correct humility.
Yeah.
But he was just doing it from a place of wealth.
Yeah. Or maybe he looked at everyone else's stuff and was like, I want that stuff as well.
Mm. But I imagine God wouldn't have chosen him if he was corrupt from the very beginning.
True.
But something I think we can keep an eye out for is where exactly Saul... I almost did it too. Where exactly Saul goes wrong in his kingship. Because we know that he ends up getting usurped, or at least the crown taken from him by God. So when does that happen and why? So here is the very beginning. And as we will see with David, David is anointed years before he actually becomes king.
Yeah,
I think it's years. It's at least not right away.
Yeah, it's definitely not that day.
Oh, actually, it's years. It is years and years, because he's a ruddy, handsome teenager or something in the household of Jesse, and then it's years later when he is commanding the armies of Saul and then runs away from him, and there's a big battle that Saul dies and he becomes king. So
Saul becomes
it's
king.
Not the immediate progression, but this is just showing that God's intention is always to say, this is what's going to happen. I'll tell you now, you can get your Ebenezer stone, you can plant a flag in the ground, whatever you want to do to remember this moment. I'm promising that this is going to happen beyond just making it happen later.
Yeah.
So God, I guess, is making a statement to Saul through Samuel saying, you will be king. You will deliver my people. God has anointed you as the prince over his heritage, and when you leave me today, you'll meet two men by Rachel's tomb, Rachel probably being the wife of Jacob, in the territory of Benjamin at Zelzar.
Ooh,
and
Zelzar.
They'll say, the donkeys are over there, and so he's prophesying what's going to happen when he leaves. And this, if you've ever had a moment like that where you feel like God says to you, this is going to happen, whether it's through another person or not, and then it actually happens, and it is kind of capped off by a significant moment or event, then it becomes a very important spiritual pillar that you build your life on. So that's probably what he's doing here. God is anointing you, and here's the sign. You will go into this town and see the donkeys or talk to these guys or whatever. And that's kind of like what Jesus said when he was going to the Last Supper. He said, go ahead of us into the town and you will find this donkey tied up. Tell them that the master needs it, blah, blah, blah. And then that makes the triumphal entry really important, I think, to those disciples that went and found it exactly how Jesus has said.
Yeah.
So it's good stuff, and it's something that God does often throughout the Bible, and I would argue into today.
I would argue that too.
Great.
I see your donkeys all the time.
Right, so blah, blah, blah. Okay, so he goes and meets these guys. They are going to give him some bread, and this is all Samuel right up until the end of verse 8, Samuel is prophesying everything that's going to happen.
Yep.
And he's saying, you should go here, go there, do this, do that. Something that he does say, though, is that there will be a garrison of Philistines, and there, as you come into the city, you'll meet a group of prophets coming down from the high place with harp, tambourine, flute, and lyre before them prophesying. Ooh. Then the Spirit of the Lord will rush upon you, and you will prophesy with them and be turned into another man.
What?
Now, when these signs meet you, do what your hand finds to do, for God is with you. Then go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I am coming down to you to offer burnt offerings and sacrifice peace offerings. Ooh. 7 days you shall wait until I come to you and show you what you shall do. So a few things here are really interesting. One of them is that Samuel prophesies that there will be a group prophesying and playing music as they go, and that Saul will join them, and he'll be transformed into another man. And so that's significant, and that's good. But then also, he says that you should do whatever your hand finds to do because God is with you. And I think that is a really important thing for us as Christians to know at times.
Yep.
If we aren't entirely sure of the next step forward, if we know that God is with us, then we'll just take a step and trust that God is going to support us in that.
Whoa.
And I feel like that's
preaching that moment.
Yeah, that's right. It's the moment where your faith becomes more important to you than exactly what is in front of you. And I think that's something that stepping out of the mission field is often quite hard for people when they re-enter society in whatever context they do. And for me, it was leaving YWAM and joining a university and living at home with my parents for a couple of months and then getting married and living in a new place. I was confident that God was going to support me. And as we left YWAM in December of 2017, I trusted that God would help me find whatever it is that I was supposed to do next.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that that would involve me not being able to enter the United States to get married, and then we had to get married a few months later in the Gold Coast, and a bunch of things that weren't ideal and were not part of the plan. But in the meantime, I felt like God gave me a peace to just find something to do and do it and work hard at it and trust that he would support me through it. And so immediately I started looking for degrees that suited my skill set and things I wanted to grow in. And so I signed up for uni, and I'm still doing that now. And I feel like it's where God wants me to be, even though he didn't specifically tell me to do university.
Yeah.
I may have found myself in a job I didn't enjoy, working full time and kind of being burnt out by it if I hadn't trusted that God was with me and found something that I felt was going to be productive and good.
Yeah. As opposed to sitting around waiting for him to say a specific word and he never says it.
That's right. And so I think that's something that everybody needs to learn when you are changing seasons. You won't always know the first thing to do, but if God is with you, if you have the Spirit of God upon you, then whatever you do, find something to do with your hand and God will be with you.
Yeah.
I think that's it's a great lesson to learn from this.
Definitely. We should have one of those radio button soundboards and just like, preaching moment or life wisdom where you get to hit it.
Yeah.
Man, if only we were in a real radio station.
I know.
Listened to by thousands and thousands.
That's the goal, isn't it? All right. So verse 9, Jeremy, can you continue the story here?
Saul turns to leave, and God gives him another heart, which is awesome, because you wonder if until that moment he was like, this isn't real, who is this old man, I just don't get it. And God gives him another heart, which is another thing in Ezekiel or Isaiah, where God says that he will take Israel's stone heart and replace it with a real one. So this is cool that it's in practicality. And all these signs came to pass that day. And when they came back to Gibeah, there were prophets. And when all knew him previously, saw how he prophesied with the prophets, the people said to one another, what has come over the son of Kish? So it's not just that internally things have changed. Externally things have changed enough that people are like, oh, this is pretty good.
It's out of character.
And when he had finished prophesying, he came to the high place, and Saul's uncle said to him, where did you go? And he said, to seek the donkeys. And when they saw that they were not found, we went to Samuel. And Saul's uncle asked, what did Samuel say? And he told us plainly that the donkeys had been found. But about the matter of the kingdom, he did not tell him anything. And I wonder why that is. Is it because Samuel told him not to, or because he wanted to keep it a secret for a bit longer, or because he thought that people would laugh? Like, hey, I'd just been proclaimed the king of Israel.
It could be that he just wanted to keep it private, let it sink in for a little bit longer.
Definitely.
Because I think if you are too ready to share something that God is speaking to you, if he hasn't finished revealing it to you, then you might look the fool if what happens is not what you've said. So it could be that... So in the instance of David being told by God that he is going to have a descendant on the throne forever, if he said, my descendants are going to be on the throne forever, what? That's awesome. I'm always going to have a son on here. Then in a couple of generations, he would have looked quite the fool because his sons were fighting over it and people were dying and it was being usurped by people that weren't his descendants. And it is not ideal. But because we have the rest of the Bible to give us context and to see that Jesus was that promised descendant, that prophecy doesn't seem far-fetched or doesn't seem wrong. So maybe Saul's thinking, God is going to anoint me as prince. Samuel just did it. That's fine. I don't know how this is going to play out. I'm going to keep my mouth shut a little bit longer just to be wise with the knowledge that you've been given.
Yep.
Because not everybody has to hear that. Maybe his uncle would have done something dumb.
Yeah. Or, and he didn't know if it was going to be like tomorrow that he would become the king officially.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And even with David, I don't know if he tells anyone, but he was anointed, like I said, as a teenager.
Yeah.
And it was years before he was king. So if he'd told his brothers who were fighting in the armies of King Saul, who at that point wasn't really, he didn't look outwardly corrupt.
Nope.
Then maybe they would have said, what are you talking about? This guy's fine.
Yeah, this guy's awesome.
Who are you are you saying that you're going to overthrow him? Are you going to lead a coup? What are you doing?
They could start some terrible stuff.
Yeah, and we kind of see that type of thing with Joseph and his brothers. When Joseph preemptively told his brothers, you're going to bow down and be my servants. And they said, right. We're going to throw you in a well and then sell you. But then God works it out. So in the long run, they look foolish for saying those dreams aren't going to come true because they do. But in the moment, those dreams were wrong.
Yep.
And so if Joseph had held his tongue, he wouldn't have ended up in Egypt and wouldn't have ended up saving them. But I imagine if he had held his tongue, if that was the wise and correct thing to do, then God would have worked it out some other way.
Yep.
Hmm.
Interesting.
All right, so Samuel calls everyone together to the Lord at Mizpah.
Ooh,
and Mizpah. He says to them, thus says God, got you out of Egypt, delivered you, and so on. But today you have rejected your God who saves you from all your calamities and your distress, and you have said to him, set us a king over us. Now, therefore, present yourselves before the Lord your tribe, before the Lord by your tribes, by your thousands. So Samuel is publicly saying to everyone, you've done wrong. You've done the wrong thing. You have requested that God give you a king, even though he did all this stuff for you. I'm just reminding you of that before I proclaim this king, because you're idiots.
Yeah. Just quietly.
Right. Yeah. So Samuel brings everyone together, and the tribe of Benjamin was taken by lot. So maybe he's saying, I'm gonna draw this ball out of the big bowl of balls, and whatever number's on there, that's the one that comes forward. Oh, it's Benjamin. All right, tribe of Benjamin, come on down. All right, now next up we have row A, seat 32. Who is that? Oh, it's Saul. But he says, Saul, the son of Kish, here's your ball. You're the winner. But where is he? He did not come on down. In fact, he was hiding himself among the baggage. And this is something that I, growing up, I didn't realize, that he'd been anointed and told beforehand by Samuel that he was going to be king. So he knew this was coming.
Yeah.
So that's why he was hiding. It wasn't that he was just nervous and had a dreading feeling that it was going to be him, just out of all of the people of Israel. So he knew it was coming and he was hiding.
Hmm. What a weirdo.
Yeah. And well, it's like playing sardines.
Yeah, yeah. When, with a whole country.
Yeah.
Who can find the king last? They become the king's servant.
Yeah. Exactly. All right, so they run and they find him. And he stands among the people, but he's taller than all the people from his shoulders upwards. Wow, big guy. Mm-hmm. And Samuel said to all the people, "Do you see him whom the Lord has chosen? There is none like him among all the people." And all the people shouted, "Long live the king."
Boom.
And this is how democracy dies, with thunderous applause.
Definitely.
According to Senator Padme Organa? Padme Amidala from episode 3.
Padme Amidala.
Yep. So Samuel tells everyone their rights and duties and the kingship, about the kingship, and he writes them in a book and lays it before the Lord. So interesting that Samuel writes these stipulations for the king, which I think God laid out for him last week. He writes them all down in a new book, which is not recorded among the rest of the books of the law, because I guess it was not the original design.
Oh.
Is that do you agree? Or
it just repeats what's already written, so they don't need to keep it.
Well, that doesn't stop them from repeating 7 chapters of the Torah.
They do love that.
I think Leviticus repeats itself basically a few times. So Samuel sends everyone away. And Saul goes home at Gibeah, and with him went men of valor whose hearts God had touched. So that's pretty cool. So God surrounds him with good men, men who are honorable and, I guess, who God wants to be around him.
Yeah.
But some worthless fellows say, "How can this man save us?" And they despise him and brought him no present, but he held his peace.
Oh, I thought we were going to say it at the same time.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and that's like a perfect representation of most people and their political leaders. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't tell me what to do.
Yeah. Very much. And we see that in today's world a lot more than, I guess, we read about accounts like that with the judges and things. Because they're elected, people are elected by democracy, and democracy is not the original design.
Nope.
God chose all the judges himself, and people followed the judges because God chose them. But when people choose their own kings, or when people choose their own prime ministers or presidents or what have you, that's where problems come into it, because you have political allegiances which can be betrayed. You have misunderstandings, you have false promises and other things just to get into office, and democracy is ultimately a flawed system because God is not at the head of it. But I think...
Okay, but Saul was chosen by God.
Right. I think what I'm saying is, in the subsequent years where kings kind of take the kingship for themselves.
Yeah, okay.
And they're chosen by other people. There are a lot of times where huge problems occur because of that, and people are jealous and what have you. But in this instance, this is the best case scenario to actually get a king, is to have God choose him.
Definitely. All right. That was a good run.
Yeah. So that is the first look at the man Saul, who will be in the story for lots of time to come. We really only see the end of him as David is about to take over the throne. But before we see the end of Saul, we actually become quite familiar with David and he's already anointed and becomes a war hero, then a fugitive, and then like could kill Saul, chapters. But he chooses not to. Yeah, it's quite a lot of time that we get to hang around with Saul and see his steady decline.
Yep.
And
steady decline.
I'm really interested to make note of different decisions and things that are recorded that show that God is distancing himself from Saul.
Yeah.
Really excited about that.
Me too.
Good stuff. All right, do you have any other thoughts about what we have gone through today?
No.
Good. All right. Well, Jeremy, would you like to give some advice then?
Maybe I've given this advice before, but when you're drying your clothes in -5, don't put them outside. It doesn't work like that. It just freezes.
Well, I have some advice to go along with that, and that is if you are trying to sleep when the temperature is over 20 degrees, then maybe freezing a shirt is not a bad idea.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
And then wearing
it
to bed. I do that almost every night, or at least did during the hot months. It was bad there for a while, but... all right, good stuff. Well, my name is Ryan.
I'm Jeremy.
You can find Scripture Read Badly on all the social medias. It's all in the episode description. Check it all out. Let us know what you think. Tell us if you think we missed something, and we'd love to have a discussion with you. That'd be great. And going forward, may all your faces be free of buses.
Yeah. Bus
because
free.
Being sick and having bus face is not a good thing. All right, all the best.
See you.